the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys over here on my right.
We've got the one and only iPhone.
We've got Bobby Somerville.
Hey,
Bobby.
Hello, Mike. It's lovely to see you again.
Oh, it's good to see you. And Bobby's over here playing with his iPhone. He's going to tell us some cool apps in a little bit. And next to him, we've got Scott Gershon.
Scott? Hi, Mike.
Scott just finished a really hellacious couple of weeks. And across the table, we've got, Johnny O'Neill. He's sitting in with us today. Hey, Johnny.
Hello.
How's your band doing?
Good. Things are good. It's good to be back.
You playing around?
Yeah, I'm more studio-oriented right now, so
great.
Still got to make it perfect.
So Johnny's joining us. And next to him, we've got The Rock, the anchor of the Audio Nowcast. We've got Rob Arbatier.
Hello, Mike, and hello, everyone. Rob.
Hello.
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 All right.
What does the Bobby sound like?
Yeah.
Who can say
hello?
Hello.
Hello.
That's a staple of the show.
That's it.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, and we're a podcast that deals with everything about the audio industry. We've got some sound designers, we've got some mixers and musicians, and some posers right here.
That's composers,
yeah. Shake it, bake it, stir it around.
Guys.
Mike.
Yes. Well, first of all, it's good to see you. And
it's been a long time. I've seen you guys.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
Well, through the summer, we kind of were doing like one show a month because everybody was really busy and schedules were kind of changing.
Don't lie. You're all drunk, paralytic.
That too. But now that we're on our show number
74.
We should be getting back to our normal schedule, so you should be seeing postings of at least two shows a month or one every other week. It all depends on how busy we get. But I'm not that busy right now.
So. Dude, I've got a gig for you.
Oh, really?
I do.
Great.
Carry on.
AES was really great. I was in New York for about a week, and a lot of really good things were happening there. So let's just start right now. First of all, the show was definitely it was different because some of the big boys weren't showing really big. You know, you didn't have the giant Apple booth, so you didn't have this giant Digi booth, and you didn't have the giant Sony booth. You know, some of the staples of a lot of the AES shows. But it was pretty cool in the fact that a lot of analog gear, a lot of cool 500 series modules, and a lot of really cool microphones. There's some really cool things. I finally got to hear the 100K mic.
Oh, for that Martin was telling us about?
Yeah, that Martin was telling us about. The
100K is your bandwidth.
Yeah, the 100K bandwidth. I mean, it's
so
way
up there. Enjoy it.
So, but you hear this clarity. You hear a high end.
Can I ask what you was hearing it through?
Headphones.
Okay.
was there
any digital interface?
No. I forgot what the preamp was. It was a really nice
Behringer
preamp
or something like that.
It was a nice preamp.
Okay.
You know, it was a really
analog
nice preamp. It was an analog preamp.
Okay.
Yeah, it was an analog preamp with a headphone amp, and even still, whatever the signal path was, you could definitely hear that high end that was just open. And well, you've heard it. I mean, how would you describe the high end on it? It wasn't painful. It's not like
clear.
You know,
no, it's not accentuating it. No. It's just you feel. It's like when you hear a mastered recording and a little air is put back in by rolling something up artificially in the high end. This just, when you compare it to other mics, it almost has a feeling like that's been done to it, but it's very realistic sounding. It doesn't feel hyped up.
Yeah.
It just feels open. And I don't know that you'd notice the difference as much until you compared it to a normal mic, but it's definitely a nice sound. It's very open.
Martin was telling me that they've used it. The last Grammy classical orchestra recording Grammy was done with a pair of these mics, and it was I could see it. It was just gorgeous. I mean,
amazing.
You could really
capture. A KM41 small mics, pencil mics.
Are they
more shotgunny long
mics? It's not exactly pencil thin, although the diaphragm is pretty small.
But lengthwise, how many iPhones?
We should measure how old an iPhone.
It's about 1.5 to 2 iPhones.
I think 2 iPhones is pretty long.
Yeah, but it's a little thicker than a pencil. You know,
that should be a new measurement.
I mean, if I could buy 2 of them tomorrow, I would. Because
how
much? I couldn't. Well, I think they list for like $2,500.
Oh,
yeah, they're not cheap.
I'll buy 3.
That's not that bad. $2,500 for a good mic.
For a great mic, yeah.
No, it really is. And you wouldn't use it on everything, but I can imagine if you wanted to get the ultimate, like, acoustic guitar recording.
What's the sound pressure level on it, do you know?
High.
Time to get Martin back.
Would you use it on drums and percussion?
I would use it for overheads. I don't know how close I'd get to the actual drums itself, but I definitely would use them for some overheads.
Right.
You know. Because
drums have those upper harmonics at the
I think they'd be great for overheads.
They would,
or
absolutely.
Piano or,
I bet you'd be. I bet you'd be amazed on how good it sounds on a lot of things.
Oh,
everything has high. I mean, other than of course something dull and dumb, but most things have a lot of high harmonic content.
I mean, I think I would use it on everything, but vocals really, because you know, I don't see that big of a benefit on a vocal going up, unless you want like the ultimate crispness, you know, to a vocal.
But most people like vocal mics that are accentuating parts of the voice in a pleasing way, and I don't think it's designed to do that.
I'm sure the proximity effect's not happening with it.
Some of Sanka's mics, I know, has a roll-off on the low end just to make sure it doesn't get, you know, mic rumble and stuff like that. But sometimes, like being the sound designer, I like low end. I mean, I like to capture all of it.
You know, the low end didn't seem like it was artificially being rolled off, but it definitely, you know, it's not one of those. I didn't hear a low end rumble, so it wasn't hyping anything on the low end, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But it was a great mic. It was probably one of the highlights was to actually get to listen to that.
But it's hard for people that record at low sample rates. Because, I mean, they're going to be hitting the brick wall, 2020 brick wall of all digital.
Yeah,
did you see Bach audio there?
No.
Wasn't it?
I mean, they could have been. But the good thing about recording with that much bandwidth is you can do some pretty amazing things sound design-wise.
No, sound design, we've been starting to use 100K mics with 192, and then you pitch it.
Right.
And it just – what
it
does is –
you have to run it not 192. You have to
– yeah, when you do that, because then what happens is you're getting more high definition. Right. So when you pitch it down, instead of getting a sound that's like kind of, you know, that – as they tell you, the harmonizer slows something down, has a sound to it.
Okay, sure.
This just sounds almost natural with a little pitch, but way different than a normal.
Yeah, because it's got all the content up there.
Yes, because you lose the high end.
Yeah, and you're getting more. You get more samples, obviously.
Because at one point I was very wary of it, going, "Great, you know, we're going to pitch down something at 40K and 50K. What is that? I mean, why would I even want to hear that?" But I think what we found out is that the resolution between the 192 and going all the way up, it does have a great sound.
Yeah, it maintains a purity of the tone. So it's definitely, you know, it would be a good mic to have in an arsenal, especially if you do sound design. So that was pretty cool, seeing the different microphones that were out there. They you know, if you go to a website, there's a lot of websites out there that will give you a recap of product by product. But, you know, Telefunken had a really good mic. And the strangest mic that I saw was a laser microphone. They had a laser microphone where I don't know the whole science behind it, but essentially you spoke and it modulated some mist that the lasers were reading.
Excellent.
And
vibrations.
Translating that modulation of the mist against the light to
that makes sense.
Sound.
And if you sing a bad note, it burns a hole in your face.
A lot of people with no shoes.
Auto-tune will fix it, though.
Yeah.
Has a long way to go, but, you know, they were basically there to look for funding, I imagine, to see about if anybody wants to develop that patent.
Wow.
That lends itself to some interesting applications for microphones, especially for mic placement, if you don't have to worry about a physical capsule per se, and you just have to make sure you're in a real smoky room. But that was pretty interesting.
That's very interesting.
A lot of 500 series modules, you know, just a lot of 500 series modules were showing up. And
why don't you explain what those are?
Well, 500 series modules are modules that are based upon the API spec of the 500 series rack, which is the 500V rack or the lunchbox. It's been around for over 20 years. And API basically opened up the spec to anybody who wants to develop a module for the Lunchbox, and it's kind of become the de facto standard of analog plugins. You know, so you can buy these little modules and you pop them in your little Lunchbox or your little
rack. So it's a hardware plugin.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's just tons of those. So analog was definitely making a comeback, which is really good. The other thing that was, you know,
overrated
was apparent was the lack of digital, believe it or not. There was not as many software developers there. Their, you know, DigiDesign did not show up.
And, really?
Yeah, they didn't have a booth. And
were there plug-in companies?
There were plug-in companies. You know, Waves was there, and you know all the.
Which
standards.
Is good.
I thought DigiDesign went out of business, and Avid took them over.
Oh, that's how. What's DigiDesign?
But you know, I think it was. You know, they say that they're doing it because you can now market, you know, different. You don't have with the web and all that, but really, you know, to be able to have your booth out there and to show people and to get all the engineers together and talking about your product and doing demos. I mean, it really – I think you're missing something. It's more than just introducing it to the world. It's kind of introducing it to the industry. And so I think, you know, they made a mistake, but then again, it's pretty expensive, and we all know Digi's kind of hurting right now anyway. But the good thing was is API made a strong showing, and they had a great party. Their party was amazing at the Roseland Ballroom, and Sonny Landreth played, and Bob Weir showed up, and he played. And the funny thing was is they had tapers, you know, home tapers, the mm-hmm. Deadheads. They got into the party and they nice. Set up their nice. Home taping.
Wow.
It was amazing. I mean, those guys, they do some social engineering that was just amazed me because they all had the passes. They all had their passes and everything, and they show up and – you know, there goes the boom stands, and they put these really nice microphones, and it was – I was impressed, you know. Good job to those guys for making it into the party. But it was a great party, and it was fun, and I did a video that started it, and also had to do some graphics on the big screen. And let me tell you, it was one of those things where literally 5 minutes before doors, I'm trying to get this software program that I bought the night before to work because I used this VJ program and it wasn't matching the resolution of the projectors. And I was like, you know, here I was ready to party and ready to have a good time. And I'm like in, you know, work mode trying to get this thing going, you know, and I'm like, oh, please, please, please.
It's the same thing though.
Yeah.
Right.
But you know what? It's just like being on the road. You know, somehow, some way, it works. And sure enough, doors opened and all the graphics worked and it was all like,
nice.
You know, thank goodness for
and
that.
And you started drinking heavy.
That's right.
Did you pick up any chicks? I mean, you know, on the road and all?
No. But I will tell you that I did see the holy grail of plugins, especially if you're in post-production.
Dum, dum, dum.
Now, the holy grail for me in plugins, and people ask for this all the time, is a de-verberization plugin, a plugin that takes reverb out of your source. And believe it or not, there is a small little company that has this reverb reduction plugin, and it's from Tax Systems Incorporated, and it was... It's technology that was invented for NTT Communications, which is broadcasting over in Japan. And essentially, what it does really well is it takes away the tails of a lot of the reverb. And I got a demo on it, and it's pretty cool. It's not going to make your sound like it's on mic, you know, but it's going to take the room away in a pretty pleasant way.
Hmm.
You know,
what's it called?
It's called the NML RevCon RR.
That's 321577.
Yeah, I really have a gift for the pizzazz.
Bingo!
Yeah.
But, you know, it must have been great.
Sexy.
That's the name.
Yeah, yeah,
right. Excellent.
It's not cheap. It lists for $1,280.
Yeah, that's a big seller.
Well, you know? Costs about the same as the reverb you put on that you're trying to
in a real room.
But
well,
but
you just play it through a Mackie. It does the same thing, right?
Thank you. He'll be here all week. But it definitely, like I said, when I got the demo, I was pleasantly surprised, you know, because people have been trying to get take away reverb for years. And actually, Bobby, you told me a way how you can like
Summon Difference.
Using, yeah.
What do you do? What's Summon Difference? Like MS, basically. You know, if you take a stereo sound or mono sound or whatever, and you impose it on yourself 180 degrees out of phase, it will disappear completely, and then you can apply comb filters on that, and it's basically the same sort of, it's not the same sort of thing, but you can do that sort of thing to it. Or if it's a stereo signal with some reverb on it, you can do the same thing, flip it over, take one side, marry it to the, I'll explain it slowly and properly to anybody who really wants to know, but it's mildly technical. It's like MS miking, but with the phase flip.
I used to do that years ago when I had dirty effects and I needed like
just
get rid of noise.
Yep.
And what you do is you do frequency based phase cancellation.
Exactly.
And then you just
I use that every time I mix for creative effects. It's fun.
Well, I've been trying to do that. I've been looking through my plugins for a long time to see if something would pop in there, and now it can.
Yeah, but $1,200, bloody hell.
I know, it's kind of expensive, but let me tell you, sometimes when you need to, you know, salvage something.
It's a software plugin, right?
It is.
Yeah, now could that be done through a hardware device, or would that only be digitally?
It works much more accurately with digital, because digital can get such. I mean, a piece of analog gear is really hard to do those kinds of filters, and I should imagine if it's doing.
Because it's all interpolation.
Exactly.
But so could it do it to complex signals, do you think? Or just like somebody going, hey.
It could be threshold. If you use threshold-based, either limiting or threshold-based EQs, you can do that. Because what happens is, but you do an inverted, where what's happening is not the loudest sound that you're going to de-reverb, it's the decay.
So
you take something around 400 hertz, right around that mid-rangey stuff.
Right.
Look for whatever's decaying, and they do it threshold-based, but inverted threshold. That is, the sound gets lower. Start affecting it there.
But you couldn't take like a song that has a vocal over an acoustic guitar, and the vocal has reverb and de-reverb.
Yeah, you know
what?
I have no idea.
I bet you could with digital, definitely.
Yeah.
All I heard was the demo they were doing, and that was basically. A single voice talking.
So let me ask you a question. Oh, sorry, Karen.
No, go ahead.
Well, say you had a sound that was recorded, but you wanted to increase the reverb without adding a reverb unit. How could you do it? It's obviously a rhetorical question, but if you can do it with a compressor with a fast release. So if that's the way it works, maybe we can think of how to reverse engineer that, because that's exactly what it's doing.
But you know what would be cool with that? If it had a key mode, where you can hear what's being taken out and just use that.
Oh, nice.
That would be cool.
That would be cool.
That's what you do with the digitized noise reduction. You just take that, figure out what you're reducing, and just hear that.
Wow.
For sound effects,
I got to learn how to do demos. Because I just sat there while the guy demoed. But key, that'd be a great thing.
You actually have to go to school to know how to use the plugin. So.
But it was really cool. And I tell you, mix and post-production, I can't tell you how many times a producer says, is there any way we can take the reverb out of this? Is there any way we can take the reverb out of this? Is there any way? And you're under a gun, and you just look at them, and you smile and say no, and you keep moving. But, you know, something like this, at least now, you know, you have an option to please a producer. It's not for every... You know, it's not for every situation. Sometimes, and I could hear it on this, it would sound worse than if you just left it, the reverb in there, because of the way it takes the tails away, the fact that you're not getting closer to the mic, so you still sound off mic, yet you don't have any reverb tails. That just, to me, you know, if you had a vocal out there hanging by itself, you'd be looking for little bits of reverb to try to put in there.
Yeah, because it sounds unnatural.
Exactly. So I think a situation like this would work if you had like a music bed or you had something underneath it
They should have like a license somebody's reverb, like Lexicon reverb technology in there to add it back in on a resynth it. But I'm sure they're thinking. I'm sure these guys are smart. I'm sure they thought a lot more than we have. Just
did Lexicon show anything?
I didn't see Lexicon.
Dude, my Lexicon broke down. Loser. The one he sold me a bum Lexicon.
You want another one?
it just so happens to have one that works for a fee. Yeah.
No, but the Lexicon 96 is actually pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that. And to be honest, I was, you know, I was working a lot in the API booth, and so I would go out when I could and see what I could and then come back. But API had a really cool compressor. API showed a 500 series, the 527 compressor.
Yeah, they just came out with that, right?
It's awesome. Really? It has what's called thrust technology, which is basically the it kind of uses sidechaining and filtering to basically bring back your high end off your compressed signal. And, boy, you could do some really nice things with, like, crushing a snare drum and then getting the attack back, and you just hear a nice, snappy hit.
So I'm so used to taking it like this. So funny, as a designer, I think you take the snare drum, you put it through 1176, you crush the shit out of it, then you get the relief body, then you take the snare, put it back in, time align it to bring back the highs, and all of a sudden you got that.
Yeah. Well, this, you just put
hit
it
a
in.
Button.
It's analog. It's great. It's going to be a big seller. It's, you know, people are going to use it, especially the fact that you can turn on and off the thrust, because the thrust is such a great circuit, and it just does some really great things to your high end. So that's basically, in a nutshell, my AES 2009 report from New York. It was good. I will say that it's kind of, you can tell the industry is kind of, you know, the search for the identity is kind of mellowing out, because for a long time, you know, people were saying, you know, analog is dead, long live digital. And now, you know, analog's making this resurgence, and you hear people saying, you know, things about digital. And, you know, digital's not going to go away. Analog's not going to go away. It's going to find a happy medium. And I think that's what we're finding nowadays is, you know, you need a little bit of both. You know, I don't think you'll ever see analog tape machines coming back, but I don't think you'll ever see, you know, like digital mic pre's taking over, you know, mic pre's. It's just, it's, you need both. You need, and the other thing that I noticed too is, you know, the people that were at the show, you know, years ago, you'd see all these different studios that would be represented there. And you'd see people from all kinds of studios in Chicago and LA and New York. Mm. You didn't see that because the studios don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
You see a lot of independent.
Super
you see
sad.
A lot of artists themselves are there. You see a lot of students are there, and you feel sorry for them because you're wondering where they're going to go when they finish school.
Yeah.
But and you see a little bit, you know, studios here or there, but you don't see, you just don't see all the people from the studio singing. Yeah. That
the industry is just, the industry is collapsed. I mean, basically everything, you know, pretty much the audio engineering industry has really collapsed. Unfortunately, because the music industry was a big chunk of it. The television industry has become much more technical now and much need less people to do great things.
Yeah.
Still getting great work done. I'm not saying that, but
computers
have really made a lot of people redundant. You know?
It's a hard career to choose to go into.
No, and it's really evident by the attendees at the show. One thing that I will notice, that I did notice too, is the knowledge of a lot of the people that I talk to. You don't have that old time engineer with you know all the head knowledge. You don't have like. There's not like a lot of Bobbies. Not that you're an old-time engineer, but the head knowledge.
I'm an old-time engineer.
But seriously, Bobby, I mean, you know audio on a level that is just, you know.
You sure you're talking about me?
Yeah, seriously.
Fooled you.
No, it's true. It's
thank
like,
you,
you know, I'd be your apprentice any day.
You're a kind soul.
Your head knowledge is so amazing. And
we won't go with that description, but it's
is that still legal?
But you see it because
it's just nerd. I mean, you know, when we were old geezers, we did, you know, we had to study
right.
electronics. You had to study. Well, it was only analog when we started, so we had to learn to read circuit diagrams and solder and understand what op amps do.
Flow charts and nanowebers and
nanometers and stuff. Yeah,
having things over. Yeah.
I mean, you see people growing up in the plug-in paradigm, and you lose a lot of that.
I suppose the question is, I mean, I like nerds like myself, but are they really necessary to make a good sounding record?
I think it definitely
helps when there's a pinch, and there's a definitely help when somebody says, "Hey, how can we do this? I want to get an original sound." Yeah, okay, but you know, man, I mean, you don't really have to be.
But you should
a chef to make an instant soup.
But you should understand. You should understand the gear, and I think what happens is you lose a lot of the understanding of how this works.
Correct.
You know, you just throw in the plug-in.
But with that comes limitations too. And I mean, I agree, 100% I agree with you. And everybody should learn a good grounding. But along with that comes limitations. If I look at a compressor plug-in, I possibly would be I would be limited. I go, the threshold does this, and I kind of know what it does. So I grab the old hands, grab the old sort of buttons. It may not be as cool as some person that doesn't know what the hell it does and goes, and maybe it's something, you know. I'm just saying an unconventional look at some things, sort of like music, jazz. Sometimes if you don't know much, you can come up with really cool stuff sometimes.
Well, that's true.
And like a great musician will smoke you any day, will go, man, I would never have thought of that. He's playing all wrong notes, but hey, it sounds fine if you like it. Great.
But you know, as an engineer, one of the things that I've been loving about the plugin world a lot is, you know, when I was doing my studio stints, and you'd fight for, you know, the LA-2As and the empty plates and all the different cool pieces of gear, they'd have a little war chest of stuff, and you would grab it for your session. You had the onesies and twosies. Now what's great is I have all these plugins, and they may not be exactly the same or exactly as good as the hardware, but now I'm comparing SSL bus compressors with Neve EQs, and I don't know, do I like the SSL EQ? Maybe I'll pop an API EQ in. Or, you know, there's so many variations to look at, and what's been really great and incredibly knowledgeable for myself, I have a lot of these plugins, and I'm actually listening in different instances what I like better. Like, I like the Oxford EQ for music, but for sound design, I hate it. But I like Channel G, sounds great for dialogue. So all of a sudden you go back and forth, and not all the plugins, I mean, all my EQs sound drastically different. Meanwhile, I know mixers will go, I don't know, EQ's an EQ, just grab it and right. EQ something. Right. I'm like, not at all. If I want more balls, I want more punch, want more clarity, want more phase coherency, they're all really different. But I never knew that. I never had the opportunity to do that when I was doing records.
No,
with analog gear.
No, that's true, because like you said, you definitely have the exposure to a lot of different plugins. I'm waiting for, though, here's the thing, you know, I'm waiting for us to get away from the emulation on the plugins and to do some really interesting things. I mean, why does a compressor plugin have to look like a compressor? Why can't they start, you know, modify it and tweaking parameters that you just can't do.
Add non-analog components.
Yeah.
But they are these days. I mean, they really are. I mean, some of them have fantastic features that you think, well, I'm glad. I mean, some things I do parallel inside my door, and I go, man, I'm glad I can do this with this, because you can't do this with analog.
Like which one?
For example, some of the wave stuff. Some of the wave stuff has got like, you know, some really cool stuff, or some four band frequency selective compression.
Yeah, that's, no, you're right.
That's time aligned.
Multi-band, multi-band compression.
I send side chaining to a frequency threshold and not anything else, so I can actually, I'm just changing the threshold of one frequency with compression.
That's you can solo that frequency too, which
you can, absolutely, which is really useful.
What's cool about are like RNS EQs, the Roger Nichols
four
EQs
by itself.
What's great is every band you add can be a totally different kind of EQ. So imagine a band that will say, the high end, I'm going to pick this kind of EQ. For the mid-range, you're going to pick a different kind of EQ and a different kind of shelf. Do you want to do even art harmonics?
Right.
And this is per band.
Wow.
All of a sudden, I'm thinking, well, I've never seen an EQ that can ever do that.
Right.
That has all the flexibility. Basically, you pick a band and you're figuring out what that band's going to be.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's true. There's definitely some cool things.
I will add something quite funny. A friend of mine came in from, he's a bass, really lovely smoking bass player. He lives in Brazil, and he actually lives in New York now. But anyway, came into town, I'm seeing him for years, blah, 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 blah. And we get together and having a jam the next 2 days. But that's beside the point. He said, hook me up with some analog synths. You know, I want to get some synths. Somebody who plays synth bass. And he came to my studio, and I played him the SE-1, which is a nice little rack mount thing, and the Nord lead, and I played him a bunch of plugins. And he's like, oh, that's great. He said, anything else? And I said, yeah, and I played him the Pro 1, an analog Pro 1. He goes, that's the sound. Where can I get one of those? I said, well, you can't anymore. And the thing just smoked. Mm-hmm. And he also plays guitar. He's a nice guitar player. So we said, okay, let's go down to Guitar Center. He wanted to buy a guitar for a six string for the thing. So we go down and he plugs in, and the guy sets him up into a Marshall amp, and he's playing like rhythm, mildly bluesy rhythm stuff. And he's going, yeah, sounds nice. And I said, come with me, come and plug into this amp. And I plugged him into a Vox AC30, which is an old man's amp.
It's a great amp.
And the guy, you know, the kid comes in, you know, he's a sweet guy, a working guitar center, but he turns up really loud. It's like, stop, you know. So I just tweaked and just turned the input up a little bit and turned the, you know, put a little bit of trim on. He's like, dude, that's the sound. I said, you know, and it's all it is really like 45-year-old technology still smoking.
Still
They just really did it right. You know, it wasn't their first attempt either at those amps.
Right.
But, I mean, there were some really great amplifiers. So a lot of the old stuff is still just better than the new stuff is.
But I think I love what Origin, Arturia did with Origin.
Yeah,
where it's the Frankenstein of synths, where it says, okay, maybe grab a Moog oscillator with an with an ARP filter and an LFO from a Moog. I mean, you could get Frankenstein audio going.
That's nice.
And so, but obviously things got shark cards in it, and it's high DSP.
Oh, it's great, though. But I love that thing.
But I think that that's where it could be going next.
Right.
Whereas take something really cool and building, it's not really the module, it's the console.
Right.
So it's really building your console that you say, well, I like API mic pre's, but then I want an SSL bus compressor with Neve EQs, and then you start building the console of your dream.
Yeah.
Digitally. But it's modeled pretty darn good.
Yeah.
A big thing for me, though, today, again, I keep realizing, it's like oh, duh, when you're going to start realizing this is what it is, but it's amazing. With the analog stuff, okay, I was on the virtual stuff, showing all the virtual stuff, and he likes it. He's into electronic music, and he's doing tweaking with the filters, and he's going deep, 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 shh, right up the top of the range and everything. And I had it quite loud, and nobody really cringed, because it hurt a little bit, but it wasn't that bad. But all the virtual synthesizers just did it all in a box. It was like, okay, I'm going to make high sounds now, and it did, and it came down. But we went over to the Pro One, and he actually tweaked the same thing. He did the same thing. He turned the resonance all the way up, and it took his ears out, and the tweeters went beak. And he said, yeah, and it wasn't louder than the... As a matter of fact, the digital synths were louder in volume.
Right.
But the thing just had much more uncontrollable dynamic range. Yeah. It just went out of the range of all the gears and bugger, I can't do this. Whereas the virtual stuff was saying, well, that must be 2002. Oh, maybe 2003.
It's all very
so
polite.
It was like very controlled.
Right.
So you never really get this sort of on-the-edge sound, which is...
Well, I think, like I said, I think the AES was definitely... It's you're seeing the industry kind of mellowing out and finding that point of analog and digital, and and there's no analog versus digital. It's, you know, we're all going to play together, and we're all going to, you know, this is the way we're going to go because we have to survive.
Yeah, because there's still no money.
But
you know what?
So true. Less money than it's ever been.
You were talking about mic pre's. Before, the only place to get great mic pre's, you know, when we were a long time ago, was the console. And whatever console you got, you know, whether it was an API or Neve, and then, you know, what you want to track on. Now what's great is you can have a little bit of every console based on whatever mic pre's and maybe in a channel. I mean,
chain. That's what the 500 series is all about. You can pick and choose your EQ. Yeah. You can pick and choose your mic pre's. You can pick and choose, you know, pretty much
the power supply and a patch point, though, really.
I still feel like a big thing is that it's based on how well it's tracked going in. Because digital can only do so much to save badly tracked things.
Sure,
you know what I'm saying?
But from the engineer, it always starts with the music. It starts with the product that you put in it.
Working with good source material, though, too, to tweak and manipulate for sound design.
But it's interesting, like, if you sit there and you say, God, how'd they get that sound? Because we're not talking about just average. We're talking about people that, I don't know why. How does a one guy get that sound? Oh, because he's got to go through this kind of chain.
Yeah, right.
Where,
right.
You know, I mean, there's people that will measure the microphone for phase relationships to find out what's going in. Absolutely. And you go, well, I don't know, just put a mic out there. It's all about the music. Absolutely. But if you want to get that extra punch, that extra high, which is what the engineering world, you know, and then it goes into MP3 and no one hears it.
Well, hey, listen, we're gonna take a break right now. And when we come back, we'll finish. No, we won't. We've pretty much wrapped up AES. We're going to move on to a few other things. So we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we wrapped up our AES 2009 show report.
Talk about
other things. Well, hey, listen, we actually picked up a person.
Just walking down the street.
Actually, we are joined right now by Mark McBride. Mark, welcome to Audio Nowcast.
Thanks.
Mark's he sounds like he's an overall sound guy, works for a Technicolor, but he walks a lot of Foley. And what else do you do over there?
We do sound design. We do VOs.
Our niche in Technicolor at Technicolor in Glendale is the foreign market. So
great.
As I was saying earlier, we do a lot of the ABC primetime shows. We will take the stems and we'll create an M&E for it for foreign distribution, mainly for Portuguese, Spanish-speaking,
wow,
that kind of thing. So we do the whole mastering. So ABC, Disney, they know that they can – they've been doing it for years, but they send us their stuff, their Disney Channel, their ABC, and they know that we're going to do the full mastering packaging. So that's our niche over there in Glendale.
Well, great. Yeah. And do you you actually walk Foley, right?
I'm the Foley artist. I was hired as a Foley artist, but we're all cross-trained because one day we might not be ready for Foley, and we'll have to do a foreign language layback. Like today I was doing layback in Romanian and Slovenian for Bolt.
Bolt.
And my,
how do you say Bolt in Slovenian?
it was more like Bolt. So, and you'll be surprised that uh-oh in Slovenian is uh-oh. But no, we do pretty much a little bit of everything over there. So, I mean, we do a little sound restoration, so our transfer room has all the analog equipment that, you know, you guys were talking about, and 2-inch, and, you know, it's, oddly enough, our 3324 digital stuff is not getting used that much. It's all file-based mostly. You know, people, wow, send us the files, and we do the layback from that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how is it walking Foley? I mean, well, first of all, why don't you explain what Foley is for the people out there that don't know what Foley is?
Yeah, well, I have a lot of tours coming through, and, you know, people ask the same questions all the time, and Foley actually originated from a guy who worked with the Warner Brothers back in the days where dialogue was just coming into play right after the talkies, you know, and this guy, Jack Foley, was working with Jack Warner, and he said, you know, we got to give it a little bit more life, so let's record footsteps and record them in sync and mix that with the dialogue and the music and, you know, give it a little bit more life. So this was like, the 30s, the 40s. And so that's how the word Foley came into being from the man himself, Jack Foley, and it's evolved immensely since then. And I started as an apprentice for some of these great Foley artists, a guy named Bob Rutledge, been in the business forever and is no longer with us, and another guy named Ed Stidell, who was Bob's apprentice on Star Wars, and so I became their apprentice. And those guys made me chase down props all over Burbank and Hollywood. And eventually they gave me the shot to go in and do some stuff. And eventually they were called onto other projects. And so I just got the opportunity to jump in and haven't slowed down since.
Wow, that's great. Yeah. And so tell us a little bit about the process of Foley. I mean, is it a one-shot deal, or do you do a lot of takes, or do you do long takes? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, when I started out was the days where I was still recording to 2-inch, and the DA88 was becoming the gear of choice for Foley, hence the digital age and everything. But, you know, on 2-inch, you pretty much had to get it right, you know. So if you couldn't get it right the first time, then you're doing multiple takes. Right now, you know, we record right to Pro Tools, so we're doing it maybe once, maybe twice. I mean, another project we're working on is Young and the Restless for France. We're like three years behind. But Sony decided that they wanted an M&E for France, and so we're having to rebuild the whole thing because they don't ever put any Foley on their original domestic production or whatever. So, you know, we have 8 hours to do a 39-minute show, you know, so that's – we got to pretty much crank through it. So wow. I don't have too many opportunities to take more than one or two takes, you know. There'll be a – thing where I'm like, you know what, it's going to be faster for me to redo it than us to edit it in Pro Tools. But basically what we do, we will do a cloth pass, which means I sit in front of a mic, kind of like what we're doing now, with a shirt on, and I'll do all the cloth. Kind of like that. But that's not something you're going to, it's not something you're going to hear. It's just a presence, right? If it's not there, it sounds really dead and stale. Okay. Next process, we'll go through and do all the feet. Now, we do it kind of guerrilla style. I mean, if you're doing a feature, you know, you have a track sheet. Everything's been pre-planned and pre-ordained and everything. But we're just moving so fast, we call it the guerrilla style Foley. So we'll take every character that we see coming across stage, you know, maybe have four tracks of feet. And so I'll walk one guy, then I'll walk the next guy in the scene, you know. When we finish all the feet, we'll go back and do all the props. And then we do one playback at the very end of the day to make sure that we covered everything, make sure that everything's in sync, and it goes off to mix.
Wow.
So nobody's editing?
We're
hanging them fully?
We're doing it ourselves.
Okay.
And when we have had domestic features and stuff that have come in, we do have a mix stage, which, boy, I'd really like to plug because nobody seems to know it's there. It's
plug
just
it.
This beautiful, beautiful mix stage in Technicolor and Glendale, and we got a nice Euphonics board in there. We got a little putting green out front. And I mean, it is just so client friendly. I just can't believe we don't have many more people in there. But I tell you what the mixers liked when they were in there about us is it didn't have to go through that middle Foley editing process. You know, we would hang it, they would mix it, and they were like, "Wow, this is great. We don't have to do anything. You guys just hit it, you know, spot on." So yeah, my mixer is doing a lot of the editing on the fly. We'll do a once over, and I'll say, you know, back that up a little bit, or this needs to be a little tighter, you know, that kind of thing. But by the end of 8 hours, we're done with our show, and it's off to mix.
Now, let me ask you, when you do Foley, and I've sat in a couple of Foley sessions,
yeah.
And first of all, Foley artists, there's a reason why they call it artist, because it is really, it is art, you know. Do you look at the leg movements? Because a lot of times you guys are following things that you can't even see the feet. You know?
Right.
So you're just going off of what the feel is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And are you always like a little behind and then your editor just bumps it? Or do you just nail it right on the...
That's like five questions, wasn't it? No, that's...
I just want all your secrets.
No, I tell you, you know what? I don't have any secrets. I mean, you know, I love sharing what I know and what I've learned. And
it's the way.
A lot of it is it starts with the inner rhythm. Like most Foley artists are either drummers, musicians, dancers. You know, they have that inner rhythm. So when they look at a picture on the screen, they look at a character and they know they have instinctive movements. You know, of how he's going to move or walk or whatever, you know.
Right.
I guess I have that. I'm a piano player, musician. I have a voice degree. You know, I've studied music. You know, that's kind of really what I wanted to do, but, you know, I kind of got into this. But also, there's the ability to visualize what things are going to sound like. You know, I mean, I can look at somebody without the sound and I can think, wow, he's going to have a heavy foot or whatever, you know. And that helps too, but the thing is that you know, I was trained by these guys and Ed Stidell and Bob Rutledge, you know, they beat me up, but in a good way, you know. I mean,
right.
they said, no, that's not good enough, you know. Look at his shoulders, you know, his shoulders are moving back and forth, you know, he's gonna walk a little heavier, a little faster, a little whatever.
Wow.
You know? So I think that has a lot to do with it. I think the inner sense of rhythm, you know, has a lot to do with it.
So you kind of look at the scene, and it's more than just footsteps. It's what his attitude is, you know, how heavy he's going to walk. And let me ask you a really dumb question, but how many different shoes do you have? I'm sure you have, you know, tons
of
different shoes.
And why are you wearing high heels now?
Right. Well, I was told I was coming to a different –
oh, you want the way?
Yeah, I guess that's around the corner.
Yeah.
No, I have bag A, I have bag B, and bag C. You know, basically, or trunk C, or whatever
right.
it is. You know, my bag A is my stuff that I use every day. I probably have three pair of shoes I use every day. I have a really nice hard shoe. I have a really nice woman's shoe. I have a really nice tennis shoe, you know. And that's basically all I need for day in, day out television, you know. I think when you start getting into the specialty shoes is when you start getting into the features, you know, like I don't know, say you're doing futuristic stuff, you know, you're gonna go to your ski boots, you know,
right.
Ski boots on diamond plate, you know, that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
So that's specialty stuff, you know. Day in and day out, normal, everyday family television type stuff, you know, it's not very complicated.
What about flip-flops?
Flip-flops, yeah. We do...
Are those challenging? It seemed to me those would be challenging.
They're very challenging.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're not challenging when you're walking across a room, but, I mean, when you're doing a Foley pass, you really have to stay on the surface,
right.
You know. We do Hannah, Montana, okay?
Okay.
So they're at the beach a lot, and they're always wearing flip-flops.
Right.
All right. So, you know, standing in place doing flip-flops, it does take practice. I would say of any shoe that I wear that I have to practice with a flip-flop, because you not only have to have the sound of the flop or the pad hitting the ground, but you have to have the flop hitting your heel. So it takes practice to stand there and, you know, do it. So.
Wow, that is really cool. You know, I think a good Foley just really, and I'm sure Scott will agree with this, will just bring life to the scene, you know, that...
I got to say, I love the bad Foleys from the old days. Guys spinning out on grass and...
You know, it's like, there actually is bad Foley.
No, I do.
Because one of the things...
Because nobody really cares about what the Foley's
like. One of the things is like that I, you know, I'm a huge Foley fan. And first of all, people do not walk on the balls of their feet. But a lot of Foley artists will go tap, 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 tap. But it's really heel, toe, heel, toe. And not only that, it's heel, toe, scuff. And a lot of it is the attitude of the character. Not only that, but then there's the sterileness. I like what I call schmutz. So if I'm doing, like, American Beauty, tons of Foley. Nobody knows it. And it shouldn't be perfect. It shouldn't be exactly... It's got to be there. And I actually like to do cloth and footsteps simultaneous with a little bit of the leg so it ties in, because a lot of times I'm going to hear more of a cloth than I want to hear a tap. Because one of the problems with Foley is that when you mix it down really low and all of a sudden you lose all of the low frequencies and you're just left with this high...
Tap, click,
yeah.
Tap, click. Click.
Right. And then they go, what is that? Get rid of it. So if you add a cloth with a with just a little bit of a bit of foot, the point is it's got to be an illusion. It's got to feel like you're hearing somebody do it in the real world. Yeah. You need to hear sync, but you don't want to make it so hyper reality or like that, but so sterile
right.
That it never fits.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons why when you hear cut Foley, like someone who uses sound effects CDs, mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. horrible. Horrible.
Unless it's from a Foley stage.
Yeah.
No, because I've mixed a couple independent features where they've given me all the stems and, yeah, well, you know, we've already edited the Foley, and so I get the Foley and it sounds like, you know, tap, 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 tap. I mean, it's like guns, you know?
I finished doing a couple scenes where it's a girl walking in an attic. So you've got to get... The sound, it's not heels, it's just a foot, but it's the on the
right.
Creaking.
Yeah.
And the hesitation. It can't be, it just sounds bad. It's got to be the hesitation and the humanism. It's almost like the same thing with drummers. I equate Foley and drumming very similarly in that you can do the drums, you know, you could program it, and it's exactly right. It just doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. There's no humanism to it. It's not laid back. It's like hitting the snare on 2 and 4. There's something about laying back on when don't or God. Just laying back on the beat a little bit. It's the same thing with Foley.
Yeah. Well,
it's a feel.
You know, good Foley, you know, trumps, you know, edited Foley any day. And like, you know, I do post-production, and sometimes if I need to add a sound effect, instead of going to, you know, a sound effect library, I'll just hop in the booth and Foley something out, because it just sounds so natural. It sounds so organic. And I think that's, you know, what you're talking about, you know, is having that organic sound when you're reading the shoulders and you're reading that. Let me ask you, Mark, what's the weirdest thing you've ever had to Foley?
Some of the coolest things are you know, my friend Justin, who brought me here, he does animation. And some of the coolest things are animation, because nobody's ever – there's nothing to base the sound on. with live action, you know, you have dialogue to kind of base what the sound is. Like he was talking about that attic, you know, a girl walking in an attic. Okay, yeah, I already picture a creak on that. You might hear creak in the dialogue, you know, and so then you have a preconceived notion about it. But, you know, with animation, we did the Muppets Return to Oz or something like that, and, you know, Beaker gets his head blown off, you know, by a laser. You know, I thought, oh, this is a great opportunity, you know, what can we do, you know? And we had these old coffee cups that Technicolor used to be VidFilm. We were bought by Technicolor. So we had all these old VidFilm coffee cups. They're little plastic things, you know. You hit it, and it's like, pop. You know, I was like, oh, that's a great popping sound. Okay, well, we gotta get some sort of squishy sound for his head coming back up. By the way, I mean, it wasn't the head being blown off. It was his head coming back up, because he never dies, right? You know? Right. So it pops back up. And you know, I just had a balloon. I just went like that. So we go pop. You know, and I was like, perfect. You know, and you, and the ultimate compliment, and maybe you could testify to this, or testify to it. The ultimate compliment is when the mixer comes back and he says, "That was great. That's exactly what we needed." You know, and you make you it makes you feel like that. You know, you're doing your job and you know what you're doing, you know. I mean, there's other times when it's like, what the heck are you guys doing in here, you know. But, you know, it's so subjective. It's so subjective that you can't – it's like anything else. You know, you try to please everybody, you're just going to spin your wheels because
– What are the hardest scenes to Foley?
High action. I mean, high action, running, fights. But they can be the most rewarding, too.
Yeah, it's fun, right?
One of the best features I worked on was Breakdown with Kurt Russell, and there's a scene where they are trying to get away from this huge, massive transfer truck that's barreling down on them through a trailer, through a mobile home trailer, you know. And they're frantically trying to find the keys, trying to find the phone, say, hey, you know, this guy's after us, whatever. So the thing's barreling down on it. So it rams right through them, and they're like, okay, we need some Foley for this. Because, I mean, a truck hitting a trailer going all the way through it, you know, that's kind of hard to cut. You can cut the basic stuff, you know. But we did it in three levels. We did kind of a glass pass where, you know, all the glass, we busted all the glass in there. The second was wood. You know, all the wood splintering, that kind of thing, and then metal, you know. So we were able to layer that, you know, and you play it all back, and it works well by itself, but a mixer can take that, and he can, you know, use a different – you guys were talking about frequencies earlier. I mean, you can use the different frequencies of the glass, the real high tinty glass, you know, some low-end effects that they'll mix in, you know, with the Foley and everything, and just
makes
really
it
paint exact. A nice picture of, wow – that truck really blew right through that trailer, you know, and you can actually feel it. So,
hey, Mark, let me ask you one more question when it comes to Foley. What do you think it's going to stay the same? Are there any – do you see technology changing Foley anymore? I mean, I know obviously the recording because you're going to Pro Tools now, but, you know, with all these new, you know, software programs, and I know samplers that are coming out with, like, you know, Foley on a keyboard and things like that.
You know, the scariest part of it is that you were talking about it earlier where people actually cut Foley and get away with it, you know. And I understand everybody has a budget, everybody has time constraints, but, you know, I can't name the show because it would make it look bad, but we get a show that we have to turn around and master for a foreign market, and all the Foley's cut in there. I mean, you'll look at the stems and it'll say like hard shoe right, hard shoe left, you know, and I was like, man, how are we supposed to work with this, you know? So we basically end up replacing all of it, you know. It's just like waiting tables, I think. I don't think we'll ever get away with people coming up to serve you food or whatever. I think as long as there's, you know, there's a human element, and I think people, they won't know what they're missing, but they'll say there's some human element missing.
Right.
And I think people say it even now, you know. But, I mean, some of the best films that I personally have just sunk myself into is where like you were talking earlier, you can hear the naturalness, the you can hear the characters, you know. You the characters are painted in the picture, you know, the way they are. You know, like Tombstone is one where Foley was just featured all through the thing. You could hear every nuance of every character, you know. You're just like, wow, I'm right there.
It's actually faster to do it on a Foley stage.
I believe it.
Because, like, today, we have a scene where they're going through these trenches with torches, and it's kind of wet dirt, but we did it as dirt because it reads better, and then all of a sudden one of the producers goes, you know, can we get that wet? You know, and sure, we could have easily cut it, put on a sampler, or cut it, but you know what? By the time you start fiddling with trying to create all of the differences between it, I just called my Foley stage just down the hallway, said, here's the scene, do it, and the whole thing was done in 5 minutes.
Wow.
The guy basically went in.
Right,
he just did it. Yeah, just went in. Blah, 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 blah. He did it in real time. Did it. Oh, wait. Did a couple stops. Then we punch in here, punch in there. Boom. Pops it to the stage. Got it. Mixed it in.
It's the same with music, though. I mean, you sit in front of computers and they're dicking around
with something. It's like trying to do a guitar part on a piano.
Well, yeah. Or well, some bad performance you're trying to fix. And the band's sitting there like, guys, let's take it from bar 7. Don't play that fills. Play something else. Next.
We've done all of the... We had a whole sampler set up. It's almost like when you look at BFD drums or something. I mean, look, our Foley library is massive. We've kept everything of Foley we've done for 20 years, hundreds and hundreds of movies that we've done. We've got it all. But the reality is we still don't go to it. Mm-hmm. When we go to it is all of a sudden I can't Foley it on the budget because I'm doing a temp.
Right.
But we need to be able to create some sounds, so we grab something we did before. At the end of the day, we always Foley it scratch.
Yeah. It's never going to be the same. I mean, it's a human... It's like...
Editing
anything. You know, anything where humans are involved, it's never going to be the same performance twice, you know?
And it takes more time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, do you find people... is there a good... a good feeder for Foley artists? Do you see a lot of students coming through that want to do it? Do you have an apprentice that wants to work with you and learn the craft of Foley? Or is that...
I got to tell you...
Bobby does.
You know, first of all, you either have it or you don't.
Right.
I think, personally.
No, but, you're right.
But not everybody out there knows that, you know? And everybody tries to do it. You know, like you said... You know, you need something, you go in, you put a mic in there, like, oh, great, this works. You know, I was able to do that. But, I mean, to really hone it as a craft and to really make it believable and do it in sync and, you know, all that stuff, I think it takes, I mean, it takes a lot of practice, you know. But I'm amazed, though. I mean, there are more Foley artists out there every day. I mean, I'll check on IMDb
many,
or something.
Though.
Huh?
It's not that many, though.
I tell you, you start looking, it's like, oh, who did the Foley on this? You go, oh, wow, I've never heard of that person before. I thought this was a small circle, you know? And, I mean, that's what I'm finding every time I go to look up something, you know.
And Foley's more than footsteps.
No, that's true.
I mean, for me, footsteps is kind of like... basic 101, you got to be able to do good footsteps. Then you start figuring out who does good props.
Right.
And then the list gets small fast.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, Foley is, I mean, it's performance, you know. I mean,
but it's also tricks.
Yeah.
No, I mean, to sit there and have an arrow or a whooshing blade going through the air or, you know, an airplane getting ripped apart and hearing all the nuances of all the metal ripping apart,
mm-hmm.
Now all of a sudden... You got to know how to do that. That's not a... You don't sit there and go, I have an idea. At the price that we pay for Foley, it's got to go fast. And you either have the tricks and you know how to do it, or you don't and nobody hires you.
Right.
Yeah. Real quick, what's the technical, from the technical side, recording Foley? Is there any standard for that? Is it always at 48, 24? Is it at 96? Or?
Yeah, mostly. I mean, mostly
how,
it's
like what
microphones
are you using? You're starting to use 96?
Yeah.
But what mics? Like, so if you're doing the clothing on a stage,
yeah, good question.
What do you do? What kind of mics?
You know, 10 years ago, Disney came into our studio, and they really liked the TLM because of the wide pattern that it had and the warmth that it had for cloth and everything. you know, it's but for feet and for really precise props and everything, the shotgun is the standard. And our stage uses a KMR 81, the Neumann.
Yeah.
The cheaper route sometimes for people. This is a, you know, strictly a matter of opinion, but the Neumann, the Sennheiser 416 is another one that's a standard, you know, mic. But, you know, there's different, there's lots of creative ways to use the
different
mics.
The art is where you put the mic, how you put the mic, and the mic freeze. We use API, actually, mic freeze a lot.
Good
because, well, you need no noise floor. I mean, it's no air conditioning, nothing, dead quiet, and you are doing gains as crazy gain structure stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, sometimes we'll put a shotgun against the glass, you know, to just get some room, depending on how live or dead the room is anyway.
Hmm.
I want to paint the picture. So if there's something that's off camera, I want the mic off camera. Mic off access. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want it to sound everything right in front of the mic all the time. Wow, that doesn't sound real. You know,
yeah.
So that's the thing. We're trying to make everything sound real.
Wow.
So much hard work as well when you want to mix it later on.
Oh, and you go, one of my heroes on the Foley side is actually my mentor, Wiley. And he's probably one of the best Foley supervisors I know. To go, you know, crazy, we did movie Cliffhanger. So he brought in a rock guy, we could call it Wiley Mountain, over at the Foley stage, and he built a 10-foot-high rock formation on the Foley stage with tension cables across the room so they could hang on it. So all of the stuff that you see on the climbing sequences is pretty much climbing up a rock wall on the Foley stage. We built just for that show with cabling, and you got mics, and people are dangling from cables, performing in sync.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, you can get as basic or you can get as crazy as you want to. I mean, like Green Mile, they actually shot the Foley on the set.
Yeah.
Wow.
That they shot the film on, you know. The Panic Room was the same thing. They built that set on the Sony lot, and then they went in after they'd filmed it and shot the Foley in the actual rooms that they used. So, you know, it time, money, budget, you know, it all factors into it. But the thing that, you know, getting back to your technology question, is people do Foley in their house now, you know. Good thing about it is that it's Scott, right?
Yeah.
What Scott was talking about is that, you know, it needs something different right away. Okay, we all have servers now, so we can just post it on the server, and they can keep mixing, and we can change it right there, you know.
Right.
And that's the kind of support that we have over Technicolor, is that our stage can support the theater that's continuing to mix, you know. They'll say, hey, we need somebody to whistle, or we need whatever it is, you know. We can go, there it is, you know, and they can keep mixing. The client has no idea that we stopped down to record something, you know, so.
Well, hey, you know, we're going to be wrapping it up. But, Mark, thank you so much for joining us and telling us about Foley. That was pretty awesome, I will say. And you guys are the, you know, you're the unknown heroes of the audio world. But it's so important. It is so important.
I still think the Monty Python.
The coconuts.
They're the best.
Tarfo coconuts.
Well, hey, listen, if you have any comments or questions or you want to reach us here at the Audio Nowcast, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
They're calling right now.
Like at CNN.
Or you can reach us on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/
Audio Nowcast. Picture of everybody's faces. For Facebook.
Well, hey, we should take a picture. Well, we have a couple pictures posted on there.
But we want people to come back if they see our faces. We've got the perfect faces for podcast.
And I will tell you that if you do post something on our Facebook page, we will get to you eventually. We're not the best at checking it.
Thank you for the kind words from the guy from AES, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And for the couple of people that came up to me at AES, I just want to thank you guys for listening to the show. And those were some very kind words, and one that wasn't so kind. No, I'm just kidding. But before we go, Rob, what are you doing? You doing anything fun and exciting?
I'm doing some things that are fun and exciting. Totally different topic than what we've been talking about. Actually, I'm doing some television mixing, which kind of feeds into what we're talking about. But the main thing is we're starting on a blues album tomorrow.
Wow.
Which I'll be able to talk about more as it gets closer to being finished, but it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm going to get to play a lot of keyboards.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which will be a nice change because it's been all post-production for me for the last couple months. So getting back into a kind of real traditional music project.
Wow, that's
which
cool.
Which should be fun.
What's that now, traditional music? But
I'll let you know when we get to it.
Ah, that's right. Yeah,
there will be no auto-tune.
Thank God.
Hey, really quick, I did want to give a shout-out to Mark Hobold, who gave us a kind compliment on our September 5th show on our Facebook page. So thank you, Mark. That was very kind of you. Cool. And sorry you posted this, like, 3 weeks ago, and we're just now mentioning. No, it was actually on the 10th. But Bobby, what are you up to?
Good question. No, I'm a couple of interesting things. I've got a brand new little project about to get underway. That's essentially, I'll tell you guys a lot about it once it gets completely out of the box. But essentially, it's a songwriting competition, a worldwide songwriting competition for writers to compete with a starting prize of $10,000, and it goes up as more people join in. And it looks like we've got ASCAP as a sponsor and Steinberg as a sponsor. So
nice.
It's going to be pretty cool. It's a little. I'll tell you the name of it all once it gets out of the box and we get all the legals tied up. But it's pretty cool.
Cool.
That's my thing. That's my side business. And then I'm pairing up with my friend from Audio Bro, who's got a LA scoring string library, and I'm doing a new library with him.
Wow.
So it's kind of...
Wow, a string library.
No, he's done a string library. Oh. We're doing something else now. Oh. And the next generation. What else? And then just working, writing music for television, which is...
Wow.
Touch wood. Good.
Wow, we could do a whole show here with the Foley artists and sound
effects. And see how good it is.
Composers and mixers.
One of us should do the acting. You should do the sound.
Make it a radio show.
Yeah, there you go.
And Johnny O, how's Logic doing?
Good, good. I'm trying to finish the album. I'm actually probably going to pick Bobby's brain.
Anytime, bro. Absolutely.
Stuff. I'm approaching the mixing phase, so I'm going to hunt down Andrew. Actually, let's see.
He is out there.
So, Andrew, if you listen to this, I'm going to hunt you down. But, yeah, all the tracking's done. Well, yeah, but I'm getting to that phase, and it's a learning process all the way. So,
that's great. Good. And Scott, I know you just finished 4 weeks of...
No, I'm not finished yet. I'm still going.
You're still going.
I've been on the same project for 7 months.
Holy smoke.
And I think we'll probably go a total of 10 months. On this project, but Season of Witch is still going, and I'm also mastering all of Guillermo del Toro's films. We're doing director's cut 7-1. It's kind of fun going into stuff we right now went into all the stuff we're doing for Mimic and restored all of the mag units and then started going in embellishing, and it was fascinating to see stylistically what was done on that film 14 years ago.
Wow.
And how it's changed. So we look at it and we go, oh, okay, well, God, I would do something different here. So we're going through doing our take on it, rebuilding it. But the biggest thing I'm looking forward to in the next 3 weeks, and I get to do this a couple weeks a year, or if that lucky, and that is I want to sit in my room, have no projects, and start shedding on the gear. Because every time you sit there and go, I haven't used my Pultec EQ in a long time, or I haven't used a plugin or combination or set of synths in a certain way, and you just kind of become re-familiar with stuff that you may not be using at the time that you used to use, or you haven't used, or you don't know why you're not using anymore. Something going back in, and just I love going in and just shedding the gear.
Dude, let me tell you, if
I have a lot of gear.
Yeah, but if you don't use any of that stuff, I'll totally help you out by taking it off your hands. Because I'm a giver.
Well, there's presets on the 6000 I still haven't told Explore.
And just by talking of gear, last little thing, I know Greg Ondo was here a couple of months ago.
Right.
I just purchased the Steinberg slider. Very nice little controller unit. But more importantly, he hooked me up with the new Endo 4 version, and new Endo 4 is absolutely screaming. It really is good. They got the side chaining really smoking and the buzzing really tasty.
So, do you love it again?
I love it even more than I ever loved it. Even more.
And Mark, you're still doing your Foley?
Working for the mouse.
Working for the mouse. Yeah. Great. And you know what? In today's economy, that in and of itself.
A lot of people are.
In and of itself is a good thing. Well, gang.
What are you doing, Mikey? You didn't tell us anything about yourself. Nothing.
You know what?
And why are you wearing that dress?
I am because it's comfortable.
But the stats are really complimentary to his eyes.
They are.
I guess I'm choosing to go
there. Yeah. Just function.
Just make sure you crush your legs. Carry on.
God. Dancing all night.
And the blush he's got on.
Apparently I'm changing. You know what? I just finished a ton of work for AES. I did I directed a documentary for API, and we finally made it out to a DVD that we gave away. And I did all this visual stuff for their party. I'm doing nothing. I'm taking a break. And then when I come off my break, I'm going to be doing directing another music video that I talked about last time, and working on another film for another corporation. So,
how would you like to direct a birthday video? I have one.
But one thing I am looking forward to is getting back to music, because when I went to the AES show, when I came back, I was just so pumped just to work on music. And it's a good time to be alive, to make music with the tools that are out there. I will tell you this. I did something on the plane on the way back that was kind of cool. I tried in-air Wi-Fi. You guys ever tried that?
No.
The coolest. That was
in-air Wi-Fi.
Yeah, Wi-Fi on an airplane.
Basically on the internet with
Let me tell you this. I was flying Virgin.
Oh, Wi-Fi. Yeah. Internet Wi-Fi. Yeah. I'm thinking, okay.
No. I'm sorry. In an airplane.
Smoking.
I was on a flight back from New York, and it was last week when it was really stormy in Los Angeles.
You could use Skype.
Yeah, you can use – well, this is what I was doing.
You can't use Skype.
No, you can't. We tried. You can do – you can't actually do the phone call, but you could do
text.
The text. Yeah. But on the way back from New York, the headwinds were so strong that we couldn't make it all the way back to L.A. First time this ever happened to me, and I fly back and forth all the time. They had to stop in Vegas because the headwinds were – to gas up because we ran out of gas essentially. And it was really turbulent, really bumpy, and I had the Wi-Fi on. And it was awesome because I was instant messaging two friends. One was in Texas.
And ordering your underpants.
Another one was on the East Coast. I was updating my Facebook, and I was streaming a friend of mine's radio show, Andy Jackson, actually, the voice of the Audio Nowcast. I was streaming her radio show at the same time. And then I would instant message her, telling her that I was listening to her up in the air. And so she emails me back and says, listen at 8:30, I'm going to give you a shout-out. So she gives me a shout-out on the air that I hear listening on the Wi-Fi as I'm texting a couple other friends. It was just amazing.
How do they charge for it? How much is it?
It was $12 for the flight.
Is it Virgin?
For the whole flight?
Yeah.
Wow.
For Virgin.
Yeah, we did the same thing on Virgin.
Yeah.
And what's the board rate like?
It was...
It's pretty fast.
It's like fast...
It's fast enough.
It was, you know what? I actually have the numbers on my
way. Bunch of stuff.
It was like, it was like one, like 176K, you know, down. You know,
way faster than a modem.
Yeah, way faster than a modem. It was about as fast as my wireless. You know, it's like Edge or even.
Yeah, it's like a mobile phone wireless.
Yeah, but it was plenty fast enough to do that. And I tell you, I felt like the Jetsons because I felt so connected and it kept my mind off the fact that we could die at any minute. And it's truly.
You didn't look up air disasters, did you?
No, but it was really amazing because it's the future because I felt so connected to everybody. And at the same time, you know, you're up in the airplane and it's good and bad. The bad thing is you are connected to people.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, I did that in Rhode Island,
yeah,
and I had the connection, but I had the opposite thing because all my clients knew I was online. They're like, oh, good. And I'm sitting there like putting out fires. And I'm like, this is crazy. Yeah. I'm sitting here, I can't get away from these people. I'm just like, you know.
But it's better than any – any movie you could watch on
the
airplane.
Of course. It was obviously the wave of the future.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was posting photos and, you know, taking pictures of me with the airsick bag and, you know, just all kind of,
what a geek.
Hey, you weren't on that flight.
It's true.
I almost used that thing.
Was it that scary?
Yeah, it was pretty. And I've flown all around, but that was – it was the worst. It was literally the worst turbulence. It was just like being in a washing machine, just bumping and bumping.
I hate that. I don't do that. You sit there.
When did you fly?
Last Tuesday.
Oh, that's true, sir.
Especially if it's a day flight and you have to go to work.
We flew the week before.
So you can't get sloshed.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was so crazy that the cloud, you know, once we left Vegas, we get over the mountains and you hit the clouds and they did not let up until we dipped below them and getting ready to land. So it was like,
that was a big storm.
Yeah, it was pretty big. It was pretty amazing. But anyhow, let's continue the wrap up. But if you,
Rob, what are you doing? You must have finished what you were doing.
I've forgotten. I think I've celebrated a birthday since we started this podcast.
All right, well, hey, gang. Like I said, if you have any questions or comments for any of us, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. You can also catch us on our Facebook. It's facebook.com/audionowcast. And you can also catch us on MySpace, which is myspace.com/audionowcast. But really, does anybody listen to, go to Facebook? I mean, MySpace anymore? MySpace
it's not MySpace anymore.
It's like taking a dive.
Yeah.
So,
Tweeter land. I think they're all going to be faddy, though, you know?
Yeah, no, I think so, too. So.
We're like relatives that won't leave. Yeah.
Just thinking about 10 years' time, like, I actually met somebody the other day. I said hello to them. I shook their hand. Like, really?
All right.
I must try that plug-in.
It wasn't in my Tweeter's Facebook. Okay.
Well, on that note, Joe, we're going to end this really quick, Bobby. What was the iPhone app that you were digging?
Yeah, I know. This is just for like a bunch of nerdy musicians. If you're like a decent
drummers.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. Okay, sure. For iPhone 3GS, if you have, or actually other iPhones, the best metronome, I made a mission to find out all the horrible metronomes, and I found them all, and the last one I found is this one. It's called Tempo by Frozen Ape. It's a smoking metronome that allows you to record multiple tempos, different time sigs, different clicks, and you can store a set list, and it has a great loud volume and also a great, obviously the headphones work, so you can do rehearsals with it. Tempo by Frozen Ape.
That's cool.
And here it is.
Play it.
Oh, here we go. Beautiful. Here we go.
All right. And on that note, we're going to have Bobby's metronome play us out. All right. Well, hey, thanks a lot, guys, for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.